Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan.
And we are from ReverseThieves.com. And in this episode, the heat wave has broken in New York City. It's a very auspicious moment to mark the beginning of this podcast. I think it was done specifically so that we could record and not die.
But also apparently it's going to like rain for a day and a half or something crazy. So, you know, with one hand the weather giveth and with one hand the weather taketh away it.
Being from the Midwest, where I'm used to like everything being air conditioned all the time, it's always been a real challenge for me to live in New York City in the way apartments are here, where it's like sometimes there's, I don't know, anyway, not interesting. So, as you all know, we are coming to you live from the pandemic, and you know, things are fine. I don't know. Things are fine slash on fire, whichever moment like you are in at, right now.
I think we've settled into a mild crisis mode.
Yeah, like permanent crisis. You're just like, no, that's how I feel all the time, is just high levels of crisis and stress. Cool, great. I'm glad we're starting this off with great news. So this episode, we're going to talk about Otakon Online, which was a one-day virtual con. And of course, Otakon is, it's like the birthplace of Reverse Thieves. So it's important.
Yeah, and I feel like it's an interesting thing that I feel like is going to have ramifications for conventions going forward, even when they go back to being in person. I feel like, you know, I think we're going to see some changes.
And then we are going to talk about some new shows of the season and kind of check in about some other shows that we either finished up or have started back up again, just like round things out. Okay, so Otakon 2020, not what we expected it to be. I think very early on, after things started getting locked down, you know, you saw like the convention news, it was just like a domino effect. So you know, obviously the more close the convention was, the sooner it fell, but you just like were waiting for every month to hear the news.
And of course, obviously, you know, as we mentioned before, a lot of them had to wait until the city or state told them, you can't put on this convention. And then they could finally officially cancel because of various bureaucratic and insurance reasons. And so, yeah, it took a while for Otakon to say they were canceled, but everybody had to do that. And then, as we mentioned the last time we did a con review, there was, you know, the first big at-home anime convention done by Fightbait, which, like, spurred so many of them. I mean, to the fact where, I don't know if you knew this, but while this convention was going on, being Otakon, Gen Con was also having an online convention, but theirs was like 4 days long.
That is very impressive. I feel like it might, you know, it is interesting that basically, just like real life now at this point, every weekend there's a convention. It's just virtual, but you can pretty much find a nerd convention that is digital every weekend now. And you have been throughout the summer, going into the fall. We just got the official word that New York Comic Con is canceling its live in-person event, so we're gonna see, and they've already, you know, said there will be a virtual version of that. I think the one we're all waiting on is Anime NYC, which is like still pretending that it's going to happen in November.
Well, I think the interesting thing is not only is there a nerd convention online every weekend, most weekends you have your choice of, basically like, do I want to go to this online video game tournament and watch slash participate in that? Or do I want to go to this, comic book thing or this anime thing?
Or book, like there's a lot of book stuff too.
So yeah, I know there was a third nerdy convention that was on Otakon weekend. It's just not jumping into my head what it was.
And am I remembering this right? But I think there was also at least, I don't know if it was Otakon weekend, but it was, as it, recently, I think there was a con that was in person.
Oh, I
Like
didn't know.
that they went ahead and had like an actual nerd convention. Hopefully people are okay. I have no idea. Maybe I made that up. I swear that happened.
Well, I do know like one, I remember like one fighting game tournament had to go on just because like the city they were in was being obstinate and wasn't canceling events. And like for them to not be financially ruined, they had to like run the convention just because it would have actually taken more money for them to cancel it than run it with hardly anybody coming in like some weird, and they just had to like run, super strict protocol and be like, well, you could have just canceled, if you just let us cancel properly, we would have done so.
Oh, yeah. So maybe that's what happened for this one.
So I'm just saying, like, I know at least one incident where like some city was being super obstinate.
But Otakon, not super quickly, but eventually, it wasn't as if when they canceled, they were like, hey, we're doing a virtual convention right away. It took them a little while, but that was also kind of earlier on. I feel like now that cons are also used to it, I feel like whenever there's a announcement of a cancellation, it's also like immediately like, hey, and it will be online. And then Otakon, I think they have never really done a lot of streaming content, things like that. I think it's something people have asked for from the con. Even like video of panels like post convention is really rare, even though they record all of the panels and such, or at least a lot of all the like big panels.
And I mean, we've done enough panels and had to sign waivers that they specifically mentioned that they record all of them. So it's like, yeah, it's something that they've, done for a while, and, it's no secret.
Yeah, and it's more like archival, I guess. So this was like a really, like Al said, this is kind of a new foray for them. And so I think they smartly decided to just do one day. They did not have a huge staff to do that, and that was clear. I don't know if you watched the feedback panel,
Yeah,
Al.
no.
But that was super interesting and had a lot of information. But anyway, not a huge staff working this, so they decided to keep it to just one day, and there were five channels, video channels, and they did it on Twitch, and there was even panel participation. There was some live panels so that people could like ask questions in the chat and stuff like that. So I think they kept it manageable, but it sounds like it was still an incredible amount of work. So like just like even before I go into just what I watched or whatever, just like super kudos to them, hats off to everybody. Overall, like the con for the most part didn't have like a ton of technical issues. There were like hiccups, which is gonna happen. It's all
Oh,
digital,
yeah.
like, it's just, I feel like there were less hiccups, though, than, like, when you're there in person.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so maybe, like, it really was even better than the in-person con as far as technical stuff went.
The biggest problem I had was, well, one, I'm going to say I was a little sick that weekend. So, like, the reason I didn't go to con feedback is I had finally fallen asleep at one point, but also I was in an air-conditioned room, and like to like hear one panel I had to turn off the air conditioning because the volume was so low. And so like I found the equalizing of the sound was a little wonky on some of the panels, because some I could listen with the air conditioner on full blast. And, you know, in other times, and then, like, another panel, I was like, yeah, I'll just, I'll catch what I catch. And the air conditioner will, muffle what it muffles.
No, actually, now that you said that, I did notice that, too, for some panels. Obviously, it was because, except for the live panels, like, everything was pre-recorded. So it just, like, it seemed to depend on how the person recorded themselves, and yeah, there was some inconsistency in sound.
They've got to find a way to, like, if they do something like this similar again, and I think it's also just that, you know, one of the problems with them putting this together so quickly with such a small staff. But yeah, finding a way to equalize the sound on the submitted panels would really help out.
One of the things that I think a lot of people brought up and were not super thrilled with, and I feel like I understood why, but that panels were 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Unless
yeah.
They were like a live, you know, a live panel with a guest or a screening or something like that. And, you know, that they had said kind of at feedback that was so that they could, you know, like have as much content, like changing content as consistently as possible. And since they were only doing it for one day, they wanted to like kind of get in as many different people and different content as possible. But they had multiple channels, so I was like, well, couldn't the panels have just been like an hour and you had like one more channel, so that like that didn't really totally make sense to me. But maybe I'm not thinking it through.
Yeah, it might have been like a bandwidth or thing, but yeah, I see what you're saying, Kate, that on a general surface level, it seems like, I wonder how, it's also just how many Twitch channels they could run. I wonder if like Twitch has a channel limit.
Oh, that could be, yeah. I'm not super like technologically savvy, especially streaming wise, so there might have been just limitations that I'm not understanding. But yeah, so I think that was sort of I really wish you could have had more panel or longer panels. And then the convention itself ended at 6 p.m., which is pretty early for at least East Coast side. So like that's pretty early. So I think also maybe it could have run just like a couple more hours, even if it didn't have to run to like 10 or midnight, but like maybe to like 8 p.m. And then with feedback, it did run quite a bit longer because like 6 was the like final stuff, but then there was feedback after. Both of those comments from me basically come from me really enjoying the con and wanting more of it. I didn't mind that it was only one day. A lot of cons have been doing like 2 days or 3 days. And like you said, Al, I guess Gen Con did like 4 days or whatever. And San Diego Comic-Con was like 6 or something insane. But I didn't mind that it was just one day. So that like kind of worked for me, I guess. Even though we're all sort of stuck, for a lot of us, or at least stuck where we are, and staying in a lot. I don't know. Still, like, one full day dedicated to it where I just, like, had it on all the time. I liked that it was singular.
I I could have done with 2 days, but I mean, I think in a lot of ways it might have been better for them to just stick to one day and see how much it worked or fell apart. But so I do you feel, did you ever stop it on like the maid cafe channel?
Nope.
I feel like if the channel could had to die so there could have been more content. I mean, they just basically had a bunch of like people just like chatting or playing games and stuff, which is like cool when it's a convention and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on and the maid cafe is like a thing. And like, you could argue how involved in the video games, but I feel like Twitch is so video game centric and it is like such a part of the cons that like I just like accept the video game room being one of the rooms, but like I didn't mind or hate the maid cafe from the like few minutes I watched of it, but I felt like, you know, if I had to choose which child lives and which child dies, and if it's, you know, the maid cafe channel or an extra panel room, that ain't no Sophie's choice. I know which one I choose.
Well, I know which one you choose, but I say that we say that as like real panel junkies, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like objectively, if I were to like put myself in Otakon's shoes, having a little bit of variety probably was the better call. But I, Al, have my own personal opinion, so I will share it. So I'm not gonna like, at you know, if I ever see like an Otakon staffer next year, complain how dare they have, you know, had one channel be the you know, the maid cafe. But I'm just saying, if it was, you know, if it was a convention just catering to the Al demographic, they would have killed that maid cafe and put it in another panel room.
I hear you. I hear you. Like I could, like I said, I could have done with more panel like choices at any time. But I gotta shout out the workshop channel. So I watched some paper craft on there. I watched chibi drawing and like rock painting, and some of those workshops were like, I wasn't even doing them. Like, I didn't do any rock painting, but like, just like watching it was soothing. Like, it was like, it had almost this like ASMR like feel to some of them, because it was just like, you know, you could, because like, you'd have kind of like a lot of people did like a top down, you know, camera, and so you could see what they were doing, and they're like kind of like gently talking you through things, and then like you just get to see things being made, and like I don't know, like there's something like really calming about that channel, and I loved it. And I'm also like, I love crafts. I'm not good at crafts, and I don't do a lot of crafts, but I love them, and I like, it's like some sort of aspirational thing, I think, that I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna do crafts, and I'm never going to, but I like to see them so much. So that was like a really fun channel that I really enjoyed. I did draw a chibi. I did do that. And it took me like the entire time to like draw one while other people are drawing multiple ones.
Who did you draw a chippy of?
I drew a chibi of Best Genist, which was really fun. And like ended up being like a really good memory from the convention. And last year I went to the Makers Space, which is their crafting area that they started. They didn't start it last year, it was the year before that, I believe, when they started it. And last year I made a craft and it was really fun, and I really liked that space a lot when I finally explored it for the first time last year. So it was really fun to have a channel that sort of was dedicated to that. And being able, like, workshops are one of the hardest panels to get into at Otakon every year. Pretty much, like, all of them are really difficult to get into. So having the ability to just like watch them was really awesome. And like, I mean, obviously there's lots of panels that are harder to get into, but I think like those are especially difficult. So always have, if that becomes like a permanent option, I think that would be really, really great.
Yeah, no. Well, certain people were saying like, oh, like my roommate was definitely going, oh, I finally got to see a mic tool panel because it was just something I could tune into. Because, he seems like an interesting enough guy, but if it's, waiting an hour and a half or, doing something else, I'm going to pick the, doing two other things. So he's like, but I finally got to see one.
Yeah, I mean, it did. I would love there to be, because they've, Oticon has done in the past for like big events where they've had like spillover streaming rooms. The only, well, I shouldn't say they've done that a lot, but I distinctly remember that for the Yoko Kanno concert. So if they can make it work then, like, I think maybe it's about finding the space to have a streaming room, I guess, for big events. But, like, it would be really cool if you could, like, somehow get it on your hotel TV. Like, if there was a, I think there, I feel like there's a way to do that where, like, if you're at a con hotel, like, not obviously, like, anywhere, but maybe it could be on there. Or obviously, they still have Twitch as an option because they've used it for this now. And I don't know, again, like, I know that there's a lot of restrictions when they're like taping in a convention center. I feel like there's like rules, that exist for a lot of these things that I don't understand. So I'm sure that there are more hoops to jump through in order for them to do any of that. But like you said, for popular panels, it's really nice. People have maybe never gone to see them. I think it doesn't have to be for every panel room. And then, of course, there's going to be like that one that they don't do that like everybody's super pissed about because, like, whatever, they didn't predict that everybody wanted to see that panel. But like, I wonder if they can just like put it in for certain events or certain rooms at the convention that are like, oh, these are like the big things.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel like cons are going to go back to being in person when this is all over. But I feel like the fact that so many of these cons had to go online is going to bleed over and affect how these cons are run when, things go back to normal, because I feel like certain people's eyes have been opened, and just like, it's, made them see different avenues. And so I'm extremely curious how much parts of this are going to bleed over to next Oticon, especially with streaming and online stuff.
And at Con Feedback, they, that was like a big question that a lot of people submitted. And of, they had said, that the just kind of like you just said, Al, but just to back you up there, is that they were like, we've really been trying the last couple of years, really thinking about like, or like trying to figure out how to stream, how to do these sorts of things. And the fact that they were like basically forced into it, like made it happen, and now that they've done it, they know that they can. Versus like, how would we do? Like kind of playing a theoretical game. So now, I think it's going to be more expected from conventions, and I think they've shown that it's possible. So why shouldn't people expect at least some of the content? Like, I understand that not wanting to totally dilute the in-person experience, but to that point, like, after basically watching this convention, Otakon specifically, and watching like the feedback and seeing staffers at the feedback that you see every year, who have helped make this con, or have seen for many over the many years and things like that, make this con happen. Like, it was really emotional for me in a way that I was not expecting. Like, I was like teary by the end of this convention, and I think it just kind of speaks to not just how much I missed it, but that like how special it is to me, and like I'm sure, and that I feel is kind of special to a lot of people, and that it didn't make me go, gosh, I hope this is online every year. It made me like desperately sad that we were not at Otakon, and seeing all these people, sometimes people that I only see at cons, and hearing people's voices, and it just made me miss them. And there's so many people that I really, really like, and the only time I ever see them in real life is at Otakon. And so much of that just like came flooding back to me while I was watching this, and it made me want to be there. It didn't make me want it to be virtual forever.
I do wonder how much, on a certain level, certain cons also don't want to stream, because, you know, it maybe cuts down a little bit of the FOMO that might draw people to the cons. Like the idea that, like, oh, well, if you want to see this panel, you want to see this thing, you've got to be here. But I think the power of a lot of these cons is the ability to like be in the presence of other fans and feel you're either not alone, or like connect to people that maybe you only usually talk to online or through indirect means. This like just, you know, a little bit of feeling of family or camaraderie. Yeah, comma, if you wish. I mean, because that's the only way you can say that. And so, I feel like there are certain people that if you streamed all the panels or the concerts or stuff, they would be like, oh, good day, sir. And, you know, as we mentioned with anime lockdown, you know, the online stuff does open up to certain people with a certain amount of, you know, social anxiety and such. But yeah, I do feel that the just the being there around other people, for, you know, as horrible as they could be sometimes, is greatly outweighed by the usually at any good convention overwhelming positive benefit that makes the in-con experience super great. I mean, how many times have you, like, gotten, you know, the best information and maybe some of the best clips from a convention you didn't go to but still feel like you missed out on something really awesome after, like, a good con report or just, like, just a good, you know, little preview of something.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am not opposed to Otakon streaming all of their content. Like, I'm happy for anybody who that would be preferable to. Like you said, either maybe mental health reasons or financial reasons, mm-hmm. or location reasons, or, you know, whatever it may be. But I think that I feel like, much like so many other things, like, I feel like my analogy is like the idea of ebooks will kill books or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. it's almost like, oh my gosh, if we stream all the conventions, nobody's going to want to go to them. And I think maybe it's because it's a pandemic, so everybody's like, no, I really want to go outside. But I think more than that, streaming the content makes you want to be there even more. Certain people want to be there just as much or even more. If Otakon was completely streaming every bit of its content, I 100% would still want to be there. I want to wander those halls. I want to go to the artist alley. I mean, there are certain things that you can't experience in the same way. And so for me, even if it was all streaming, it wouldn't matter. I want to be there. I want to see you guys. I want to see everybody. I want to like live it. And I think that's also interesting just because now, like, I'm going to age us like nobody knows how old we are or anything. But like when I first started using the internet, it was a really, really special place because I felt like I could connect to people that weren't in my community, that like in my physical community, that like I felt like I was a misunderstood teenager, you know, or whatever. And so it was really special. But like now, like our whole, like so much of our existence is online. And especially now, people are computers, right? Like, I think that they're actually, I'm pretty sure now. So now there's like something really special about the in-person experience. So it's like kind of like flipped around on me that it was like, not that I don't think the internet is awesome because I'm on it 24 hours a day pretty much. So obviously I think it is, but now I feel like I'm looking for that specialness in events that I can go to and spend time at. So I think Otakon will always be that place for me.
I just have to derail the conversation for just a second because you said I'm online 24/7. I just imagined that like when you go to sleep, your subconscious just like starts browsing the internet. And you're like, huh, my subconscious is a really big hockey fan. What the hell?
You went down that Wikipedia rabbit hole and you just didn't stop reading.
What did you like content-wise? Because, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, very broad, philosophical, general trends. But what was your, of you saw? Obviously, you like the workshops. You mentioned that already.
So there was a Carolyn Tuesday live panel. So there were a couple of panels live at the very early morning at the con that were live from Japan. So I assume that's why they were so early to accommodate, mm-hmm. the massive time difference. So they had Watanabe there talking about Carolyn Tuesday, as well as the singer who is Tuesday's singing voice. I don't remember. I don't think she's her talking voice.
No, I think they have separate singing voices.
That was just really cool. Apparently, like the group that was there hadn't been reunited to talk really about the series since it had wrapped. So like that was really neat. And the singer who voices Tuesday is bilingual. So she spoke both English and Japanese. So she was, kind of nimble. She wasn't translating. So like occasionally she would translate something, but there was also a translator off camera. And then, like, at the end of that panel, they took live questions from the Twitch chat. So, we recently talked about Carolyn Tuesday and, finished it. So, it was, like, pretty good timing to kind of talk about it, I felt like. And some of the panel was a little difficult to hear. Unfortunately, I felt like hearing the translation and I don't know, it's sometimes a little bit difficult, but they showed a bunch of sort of behind the scenes footage for a lot of the musical sections. So because they used a lot of live footage that they then animated. Not really. I was like, is this rotoscoping? But it was like 3D, so like I don't think so. At least I don't think that's what you would call it. But so they were showing a lot of like, somebody would come in and they'd like do the whole like dance sequence for like that one like guy on the American Idol-esque show. That like his dance sequence like was an actual person doing that, or like Carolyn Tuesday, like playing instruments, they were actually filming them doing that stuff and then like animating. So like all of that like behind the scenes footage was really cool, and seeing a lot, just like it was all like all like the musical elements, which of course were such a big part of the series. So I think that was like the best part of that panel. Did you see any of that panel, Al? Behind the scenes footage, they were kind of commentating over the top of it, but like I just couldn't follow. And she had started the panel by singing, so she did sing live, which was cool. My only real disappointment was that nobody asked any political questions at the end, even though that like the series is like has like such big political commentary in it. And I don't know if like they just didn't ask those questions, like they just avoided them, or like nobody asked them. I don't know. But I was like, oh, come on, like I want like a statement here about it. But yeah, so that I thought that was a really cool one. I also watched Daryl's 30 Years Ago in Anime panel, Daryl Surratt. Because it wouldn't be Otakon, one, if I didn't hear Daryl's voice, but two, that where if Daryl wasn't making us all feel old, like it was like, oh, I know all of these shows. that was really fun, and like was exactly a Daryl panel. Like it felt absolutely no different than if we were, in the same room. So that was really like a nice familiar.
What was your favorite show from 30 years ago that he mentioned?
Now I like can't even remember anything because he ended with Mad Bull, which like sticks in one's mind, and that is not my answer, by the way.
Yes.
I just like can't remember.
That's fine. I don't know if you saw this one, there was a cool panel about the 49ers.
No.
Oh yeah. This one lady did a panel on the Fabulous 49ers, which I thought was interesting that she mentions that, like, which I guess I've never really thought about, but like how there's a decent amount of controversy over who is a Fabulous 49er. They're like some standout people who are just like on everybody's list, but like once you get past like the A tier, like basically the B and C tier 49ers, like very, very much on like essentially who. And like, and as she mentioned, it's worth noting that like not obviously not all of them were born, Taisho 49, so like certain people will, pick a very tight band of years, and then other people will pick a very broad, almost like a decade. So yeah, she basically, I thought that was interesting, and didn't feel like a lot of people talk about how like the core 49ers are pretty, your Hagi Omoto and the such are pretty like canonized by everybody. But there's a lot of like smaller artists or, maybe other kind of artists that people quibble over. And then she basically went over, the general ideas of the movement. And then, she only had a half an hour. She just generally went down like the usual, the ones you always hear about, what their contributions were. But that was a pretty good panel. I'm curious what the hour. A lot of my things were. I wonder what an hour version of this one would have been like. I will say the one panel that I actually turned off the air conditioner just to watch, even though it was so low, was the Socorro Wars panel. One lady and her friend did a whole like rundown of the Socorro Wars series. So I did learn a lot about like the origins of what led up to the series. I also did not realize what a failure the fifth game was compared to the other ones, which definitely explains why it took so many years for the new game to come out.
I'm impressed that you learned stuff from that panel because you most very recently on this podcast like gave us like a really, like a rundown. So I was like, Al already knows.
Oh, no, she was she was definitely, what do you call it? She was definitely a Socorro Wars scholar. Like, what do you call it? I'm pretty knowledgeable, but she was like, my knowledge of Typhoon was her knowledge of Socorro Wars. So I was a pretty impressively detailed panel. And once again, one of those panels, I'm like, ooh, well, what would this be like an hour long? If I learned this much from like the rushed half an hour panel, ooh, give me the juice. Then hopefully next year they'll give me that juicy full 1 hour panel. I also really enjoyed the MATTREA, the Mystery Anime Theater 3000. They did this 80s OVA called Twinkle Nora Rock Me, which was, just kind of, I mean, I remember when you went on that little jag of watching like obscure 80s OVAs and like, man, some of these were buried but forgotten for a reason. And
I was
Twinkle.
just thinking that. I was like, oh, I have some suggestions.
Yeah, Twinkle Nora Rock Me was like, she's this psychic bounty hunter that's like clearly like whoever the writer's like idealized girlfriend, and this like this little dancing troll that like follows her around, and she's it's definitely a show. They definitely picked a good one. Like, if you're a big fan of Twinkle Nora Rock Me, interesting. Because otherwise, it definitely was like, huh, only the 80s, I guess. But yeah, that was fun. And it had like a really good production values. Like, they had like the whole, they had like robots that the guy made with puppeteers. And they had like a whole, like skit segment, and they even had like one or two faint phony commercials they made.
Wow. That's like a whole production.
Yeah, no, I was just expecting, them to play, an old OVA with just like the silhouette of three people at the bottom, which was, it's fine, it's cool. But like, they did it like a whole little TV episode, which was like really impressive. Like, if anybody's put it online, I definitely think it's worth tracking down if you're just in the mood to watch, a bad OVA with some jokes over it.
I saw them talking about it. I didn't watch it, but I saw them talking about it in the opening ceremonies section. And they were talking about how, the original, Otakon, when it first started, there was a group who did that series, did their own version of that. And then I guess for the 20th anniversary, they like came back and did it again. And then the people who did the one this year that you're talking about, Al, aren't those people, but they like I not like got permission, but you know, they sort of like got their blessing to like go ahead and do it them do their own version of it. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there was a whole section at the end, like afterwards, where like the main guy who was like essentially the Joel slash Mike of the show, like gave them like a few seconds at the end of like, we're not the essentially what you said, we're not the original team, but we would like to think of ourselves as the spiritual successors now that they've retired, and but the only reason we're here is because of that, the original team, basically laid the groundwork and, basically a salute to them. So, definitely a lot of reverence from this new team for the original team.
I mean, yeah, I thought a lot of, just because you were talking about production values, Al, like a lot of people did such a good job with their videos. And that's actually one of the things that, not that I necessarily would have gotten picked to do a panel if I had submitted one, but I was like really, I didn't submit at all because I was like really worried about like, how would I do it? And like, I would want it to be like really nice and really good, and like I don't know how to like. Also, video cameras make me really nervous. Like doing a regular panel in front of hundreds of people, fine, no problem. Doing it by myself in front of a camera, terrifying. So yeah, I was like very impressed with everybody's like setup. Like everybody kind of did it differently. Like I just saw like lots of different ways of doing it, and like if I ever do, have to do it, now I have like ideas about it. But yeah, just everybody really, it's the world of streamers, I guess, so they know what they're doing.
Oh, two things. One, I did watch the like chemistry of anime and physics of anime panels, and that guy, he the same guy did both panels, where he'd like look at a physics thing or a chemistry thing that happened in an anime and like, plug in the formulas and how realistic was it, or how fantastic, like. Sure, they blew up K2 in Symphogear, but how much energy would that take? And he took live questions during the panel, like after every experiment, like the person helping them with the panel would be like, "All right, you got these questions." So yeah, so like you mentioned, some of them were live, and his two panels were live like that, and did like feedback with the audience of like, "Well, why did you use this equation?" Blah blah blah, and stuff like that. And the other thing was, I totally forgot. I'm so glad I remembered to do this. How much did you look at the Twitch chat while you were
You know
watching?
the answer to this, right?
I occasionally, maybe because I was a little under the weather, did pay attention, and I felt like this weird, like, gutter or like channel for all the people who would normally like pipe up during a panel where they could talk all they want and like, but actually, or make their own comments, but not in any way interrupt the flow of the actual panel. So it was like giving these yahoos like a channel to like express to the world or like everybody else in attendance the random blah 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 that they have to say. But it didn't mess up the panel, which is the worst part of those people. And I was like, man, I wish there was a way to do this, what do you call it, had an actual physical panel. Like, you just, shut the hell up and just comment on this little Twitch thing on the side. And
what if those comments were just like streaming behind panelists? Like, so as a panelist, you couldn't see it, but there'd just be like a live feed. That sounds horrible, by the way. Don't implement that. But I like that what you're saying, Al. It's like, oh, all the people who really can't stop talking when they're at a panel, they all weren't there to do that. So there is an upside. Because imagine also, right? So this was an event where it was recorded or live, but like there weren't other physical people in the room. Right. So but like if we were at the con and it was streaming the panels, there would be, you know, there would be some audience interaction with the panelists or whatever. And like, how would that change things? And like, you know how people get when they know that they're being streamed, or like how some people get like, oh, well, like now I'm gonna like showboat or whatever. Or like, oh, I know that this is streaming live, so like I'm going to do XYZ.
Yeah, no.
I didn't think of that. That's a downside.
Also, the other disturbing thing about reading those comments was the fact that everybody was like, hey man, remember all this old timey stuff? And it was all like from the 2000s, and everything before the 2000s was essentially like, you know, the before times.
I mean, we got to be used to that by now.
Oh, yeah, no, but it was we've mentioned it on the podcast plenty of times, but it was just another reminder of just seeing all these little kids being like, ah, man, remember the old times of shows from the 2000s?
I bet they weren't even talking about, like, 2000s. I bet there were some 2010s in there, like, some, like, it's 2020 now, so 2010 was 10 years ago. Like, remember that old show that people used to like, Attack on Titan? So I just wanted to end with, you know, closing ceremonies, which I mentioned, I think, a little bit, but where they, you know, announced next year's con for 2021, the hotel block is already open for that, and it's going to be in August. So, like, a little bit later than, you know, I think it always moves around, but it's been in July, I feel like, more often than August. So it is in August next year. And they announced, like, a few guests, you know, to make it, like, exciting or whatever, to, like, to get ready for the, hopefully, a year where we will be able to be in person, maybe. And Maruyama-san is going to be back. So, like, excellent. He's, like, such a fave. So it's great. It's, like, almost, like, tradition to have him there. So it's nice that once Otakon gets back to being in person, that he will be there. And they also announced a band, Spark Speaker, who I don't know, but I'm pretty excited about. They showed some like music video footage of them, and then they had like a little announcement from them, and they're an all-girl band, but it's not like idols or anything. So I was excited that it was like a band. And just, you know, anyway, that's more my interest. That's more my taste. So I was excited about that. So yeah, I feel like they're being optimistic about next year. When they did the feedback, they were talking about finances a little bit. People were asking, you know, how is everything? You know, people were very worried. And they said one of the things that really helped is that a lot of people who, you know, had their tickets canceled for 2020, decided to roll it over. That was an option for people to roll it over to 2021 instead of getting like an actual refund. And they said that, like, that was massive. So most people went that route. So that has, like, was really, really helpful and really important for them. And, you know, is like helping them have a good next year. So, they didn't talk a whole lot about, you know, finance otherwise, but, you know, it seemed like, obviously it's hard that there wasn't a con, but, you know, things are looking okay for them. And obviously because they operate as a nonprofit, it's a little bit different than, you know, for-profit conventions that I'm sure are, I mean, I've seen headlines about like Reed Pop and stuff, which is like obviously struggling because of the things going on. So, yeah, it just felt like really optimistic at the end. All the staff there were, of course, like really tired, but they were really enthusiastic and, you know, really happy with how the con turned out. So, like, you know, it feels like full speed ahead for 2021. And I hope we're all there. I hope we're all there talking about how crazy a year 2020 was. That's going to be like the dream that I hold on to.
You gotta look for tomorrow.
Okay, so let's talk about a new season started. And in our last episode of the Speakeasy, we kind of talked about how, I think actually you said this to me and I hadn't realized it, but that there's not a ton of new shows because of the pandemic and then like other shows not being finished and, you know, like production schedules are all like out of whack and all this stuff. So not that there's like nothing to watch because there's tons, but like just like a lot of shows are a little bit delayed. So even though we checked out some new shows, I only checked out like four. Like there's not a whole ton that were just like available and like of interest to me. So a little bit like of a lighter season.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Let's talk about Netflix shows first, I guess. We both watched B&A, Brand New Animal, which, you know, like, it's like, where do Netflix shows in seasons, where do they count? I don't know, like, which season is it? Whatever. We're putting it here.
So this is the new Trigger show, and it seems to be just this wave of, like, anthropomorphic animal shows. Like, it was Beastars and now B&A.
Yeah, maybe, I guess, like, animal people are like having a moment or something. I don't know.
And this one is about a human girl who one day gets transformed into an animal person in a world where animal people are persecuted. And so she flees to this one city where, you know, like the one city that is all animal people. In hopes of finding a way to cure herself, and then gets involved in greater politics and shenanigans.
Yeah, and like crime syndicates and all, like different parts of the way the city works, and like you said, the politics and kind of the greater world politics too, and the history of beastmen in the world. Like all wrapped up their religion. It's like, I thought it was very interesting that, you know, I feel like some of this stuff to me is like coming from Beastars just because like that was an award-winning manga. So I think it's probably having influence, I would guess. And then obviously it just had an anime and it's getting more. But I was like pleasantly surprised how different B&A was from Beastars. Like, it wasn't, I didn't feel like it was just parroting it. Like, I feel like it's, there was some things that I think both touched on, but they they both have like very different themes and like greater, like their greater world contexts are very different, I thought.
No, definitely. A lot of my thoughts on this series come down to the episode count. What did you feel about the general pace of the stories? I think.
Well, I was thinking about this too, because for me personally, I didn't find BNA did not hook me. It did not draw me in as quickly as Beastars did. And even though overall I enjoyed BNA and thought it like had some interesting ideas about assimilation, I think is like a huge point of context for this show and like eugenics, things like that. So it's like very interesting stuff, but I felt like it took a while for me to get there. Like it took like half of the show before I was really like, oh man, now I really want to like finish it. Like I really want to know what's going on. And I think that for me, it kind of came down to characters there. I wasn't really like, I don't know, like the characters for me were like fine, but they weren't like super, I wasn't like really interested in their story. I was more interested in like, or what was more interesting, I guess, about the show was like the world and the themes and such. And I don't think it had bad characters that I wasn't interested in totally. Like when we were talking about listeners where I was like, I just don't care. It wasn't like that, but I didn't feel like deeply invested in the characters, I guess. So it took me a little longer to kind of get into the meat of the series.
Well, the problem I found, at least to me, was it seemed like it had two inconsistent paces. Like, I feel like the first half kind of very slowly meanders in the world. And then the second half felt like all these big revelations and like character motivations pop up. And then it seemed very rushed. And like part of me almost feels like it almost felt like part of me wonders if it was like originally like scheduled to be a longer show or something, because it feels like it was taking its time, like it was a longer show, and like you said, like maybe it was meandering a little too much, but then it seemed to like overcompensate in the end, which was like, sure, you're a lot more exciting now, but it seems like, boom, just every 15 minutes, another major revelation. That maybe, like, I felt like this could have been, like, dug into a little more. And I think it would have been better. So that was my major structural complaint. It had these two paces that, like, never felt super satisfying. None of them ever like made me stop or dislike the show, but both of them made me like, if you had like smoothed this out or like maybe like had a better picture of like where you were supposed to arc, I think I would have enjoyed the show a little more in that respect.
I can definitely agree with that. I can definitely see what you're saying, especially because like the beginning, it has like these little seeds of things that are like, whoa, that was weird, or like, huh, wonder what that means. And then, but then it also has like a very playful nature to it that is like a little more like wacky, I guess. Overall, it's a little more wacky. Which sometimes is, like, it's interesting how that sometimes fits and sometimes doesn't fit. Like, the commentary in the series.
Yeah, like, when they were fully wacky with the baseball episode, it was fine, because it was the baseball episode.
That episode was so weird. Like, I'm sure people love that episode, but I was just like, what is this doing here? And also, is she now on a baseball team for the rest of the series? Like, isn't that what the end of this episode? Like, it was almost like a, like, sometimes episodes felt like a Looney Tunes, like, that was, like, almost like a Looney Tunes-ness to it, because it was, like, oh, well, like, nothing here matters, or, like, is, like, you know, like, we could be killed in this episode, and nothing, you know, that's not actually what happens, and we'll be back for the next episode, but then, like, I mean, certain characters in that episode do reappear, so, like, it's not totally a throwaway, but I think I was just, like, oh, all right, like.
Yeah, the, like, one little bear from the team, she appears a lot later in the series.
But then, like, once it, yeah, I don't know, like, I definitely can see it being, like, two halves, because even if you felt like it was too fast, I was definitely, like, much more interested in what was happening, like, halfway. Like, I was like, okay, now I want, like, now I'm interested.
I just wish they had spent a little more time. Like, it didn't need to be, like, twice as long, but I felt like if they had adjusted it just a little more, I think I would have been, like, let certain revelations and have a little more time to manifest. I think I would have enjoyed it a little better.
So I also watched the Netflix show Japan Sinks, which is based, or, like, inspired by, I don't want to say it's based on the classic novel, because I don't know how much it's, like, actually portraying that novel, or if it's just, like, you know, inspired by the novel, about, like, a massive earthquake in Japan and, like, ensuing destruction and chaos that comes with it. So this is this is also from Science Saru, which is the Masaki Yuasa studio that, you know, is pretty new still. So I only watched the first episode of this, and honestly, it kind of made me physically ill. Like, there is no way that I could watch. I don't know if I could watch this show, period, but I definitely cannot watch it right now. It's just, like, so devastating. And, like, the first episode is just, like, pure terror and tragedy and devastation. And, like, the end of the episode is horrific. And, like, it's just, like, I don't know. I don't know how anybody could watch that right now when, like, we're going through so much. Like, it just made me, I was, like, so totally could not even sit still watching the episode. And I just assume that continues for the whole thing. And it's, you know, like, it's following a family during this ensuing chaos. And, yeah, it was just so awful. I was like, I mean, well done, because, boy, was I feeling horrible and uncomfortable. I assume that was the point. But it was just too much.
I mean, it was probably one of those things where, like, it was a, you know, already in the pipeline, so they just had to put it out. But I definitely could understand why might not be the right time for certain people. But I mean, at least it's good to see Science-Saru is, what do you call it? Still doing good work, even if it's, not your cup of tea.
So moving on. Okay, so I feel like so I think last time we were talking about new shows, we talked about Tower of God or whatever it was called, which is like, was the show like Crunchyroll was like shoving down all of our throats. So now the new one that they're shoving down all of our throats is God of High School. And sort of like similar source material, like they helped get it made. It's a is it a webtoon or like a, it's like I think it's on like a like a comic app or whatever. It's based on like a Korean series, I think. And so like I feel like it's just like because Crunchyroll is involved in it, it's like getting this massive push from them. So I have no idea if like people are enjoying it or not. Did you watch that one, Al?
Yes.
So I mean I'm sure everybody has already described it this way, but it's basically like tournament arc the series.
The thing about that show that, like, me and my roommate were commenting on is it is such a beautiful show. Like, the fight sequences and the action sequences and the chase sequences. If you just love animation for animation's sake, I mean, I didn't watch past the first episode, but if they keep up that level of quality, oh my God, are the keyframe kids gonna love this show? But beyond that, I was like, wow, this is well done, boring stuff. Because, like, I didn't care. But man, was I impressed by the show I didn't care about.
Gotta agree.
The characters are just kind of flat. Like, there's like goofy guy who's clearly like the Vash the Stampede, like easily underestimated. Then there's the girl with the glasses who fights with the sword. And then there's the lazy but kind guy. And they're the three main characters. And then there's a whole bunch of other people who are bad guys or friends, and I don't know. Like, nothing about the show was particularly awful. Like, there wasn't like a super pervy guy or like, oh my God, this guy is just the most horrible character. Oh my God, you call this a female character? There was nothing, none of that. There was like one like super bad criminal dude, but he was just more boring than like horrible or off-putting. But yeah, just none of them also like made me go, oh man, I'm really curious what this character's story is, or man, I wonder how this part of the story. It's like, it seems like the show for people who really love tournament arcs and just want a show that's nothing but that.
Which I'm sure that there are like plenty of people like that. That's literally the opposite of me. I hate tournament arcs. So like I was already just like biased immediately. Like I totally agree with you, Al, about the characters. I felt like this was a really like style over substance kind of show, which I think like a lot of people will enjoy. Like it's I'm sure it's like a really fun show for not me. Like you said, I didn't find anything super objectionable about it. I mean, the main girl I do think gets some fan servicey stuff. And I wrote that the only thing that could make this interesting to me, which I did, you could totally read it this way from the first episode, is if the main guy on the like the bicycle guy, whatever, like you said, the Vash the Stampede, if the love triangle is not whether he or the other guy gets the main girl, it's whether or not the main guy is in love with his guy friend or his the girlfriend. Like then there you go. That's a nice new twist on this because like that was the only thing where I was like, I don't know if you guys are doing this on purpose, but whatever. Like they get some meaningful looks in there. So like otherwise, I feel like even more than the other show, whatever, did I say whatever it was, Tower of whatever, like, I feel like this one I can see being really, really popular.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, like, when they go all out in the show, they really, like, those fight scenes and those chase scenes are amazingly well animated. Like, they're well directed. They're, like, it's just, yeah, I just had a hard time engaging.
Like, very, very, like, analytical about it. You're just like, yes, I have no interest or emotions in this at all.
If you just want to see, like, well-executed fights, then, like, there is a market for this show. It's just not Kate now.
Basically. So one of the shows that's an original for this anime season is Gibiate, which, okay, I'm sure that everybody just calls it Gigabyte, right? Because, like, in my head, that's, mm-hmm. I know that that is not what it's called, but, like, that's just what I call it. And so this has got some interesting sort of production stuff. So this, I don't remember if, I think I saw a, like, preview for this.
Anime Expo online, like, played, like, the first, like, 10 minutes or something.
No, it wasn't this year.
Oh.
So Amano, Yoshitake Amano, the artist, was at New York Comic Con? I don't remember. Anime NYC? I don't remember. Anyway, I went to a panel of his, I think it was last year, or, like, maybe it was even the year before, but I'm pretty sure that they teased this because he's a producer on this series. I swear I went to something where they, like, talked about this very early on. Maybe I just completely made that up, but anyway, it doesn't matter. So I just wanted to mention, like, Amano is involved in this series, but it's about the modern day and there's a horrible disease, great timing, that's turning people into monsters. And also then there are two historical figures who get transported, like, time travel into the modern day. And then, like, team up with the, like, some of the survivors to take care of these monsters and this disease. And I assume this somehow is, like, related to the past, which I don't know from the first episode, but I, like, assume so.
Yeah, I did find that weird that, like, it's clearly obvious that something that happened in, like, you know, feudal Japan is what led to this disease. But I feel like usually a show will, like, it's not going to give you how it is, but, like, at least hint somewhat that they're tied together. But the show makes, at least in the first episode, no effort. It's like, it feels weirdly, because of that, like two shows that just happen to bump into each other and become the same show because of that. Because it feels like there's, like, the two, we are guys from the past, thrust into the future. And then it's, oh my god, I'm a girl, and my friends tried to survive in the post-apocalyptic, monster-filled future. And then it was like, oh, I guess we're the same show. Wacky. I mean, once again, I feel like any amount of, like, savviness about how plots work, you realize that these two stories will eventually turn out to be the same story, but I wish the show had made at least like a minor like attempt to like show that that would be the case.
You know, we have a samurai and like a ninja from the, you know, the past who get transported, and one, they like are completely like, it doesn't faze them in the least. Like, they are just like basically like, oh, all right, cool, like that makes total sense, like totally unfazed by it at all. They're also like, I feel like the character designs of the show are all over the place, and they feel like they're from different, not only are they from different time periods, they're like in the show, but they're like literally from different times. Like, I don't know, like it was like a weird mashup. And then also just the look of the show, it feels like it's from the 90s and not in a good way. Like, it felt like even the story and the way characters act and everything just felt like old. It just like didn't feel fresh at all. Like, I don't know. It just like, even this, like the samurai character, he's just like very stoic and like whatever. He doesn't talk. And like, it just was like, what is this? Like, why? I don't know. It just didn't. I don't have anything good to say about it. Like, even the animation quality was like, ooh. It's almost like, why bother?
It was weird because we watched these two shows back to back. It felt like, it felt like King of High School felt like, it just had so much money poured into it, whereas Gigabyte just felt like, what do you call it? It was like made with pocket change. It definitely felt like super cheapo. It wasn't by list of Hamlin, but it also was not, what do you call it? It was definitely not given, prime resources either.
I haven't thought of Violence of Hamlin in a while. I love it. I feel like this just, yeah, it just really, there's like not a lot to say about it. I mean, maybe someone can tell me if it actually somehow gets good, but I really, very, very unimpressive first episode.
I was like, also just, I kept waiting for that. Like that one dude that was driving them around to die. And then when he went to get his samurai sword that he kept for the samurai guy. And then he like split off from the main group. I'm like, all right, now he's going to die. And like the fact that he was still alive at the end of the episode, I was like, you're going to wait till episode 2 to kill this guy off?
It almost feels, now that you said that, it just makes me think that like, everybody working on it was like, oh, you know what we're going to make? We're going to make like some like really like bad, but like with nudity 90s OVA. And they were like, they don't do that anymore. And they're like, shit, what are we going to do? Oh, and like that, the, like somehow this is like what came. They were like, they don't? Crap. Like, don't you feel like I was just like, something about this show just feels like that era, like that's what they want to be doing. Like,
I do feel like every once in a while you will just feel like, I mean, I feel like nostalgia shows are just come and go. I mean, some of them are obviously better than others. I mean, like Megalobox is definitely like supposed to have this, you know, remember the past feeling. I mean, the fact that they even put in, like, those VHS scan lines.
I'm not saying you can't do it well. Like, you can, but you can also do it badly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not against, you know, almost called them period pieces, like, as if they're, like, period dramas. But, like, I'm not, like, against that. but
like a throwback tribute.
Yeah.
Also, all I can think is, will we ever get to the time when someone is like, let us recreate the train wreck that was Weisskreuz?
No.
Kate refuses to let that happen.
Will not let this world go on then. That would be the biggest problem. No, like, obviously that would not be the biggest problem of 2020. But, like, imagine. Yes, actually, that is exactly what 2020 needs, is someone to announce, like, the revival of Weisskreuz. Like, because, like, that just fits in with, like, the fucking worst year ever. Like, it would just...
And so capstones 2020 with the remake of Weisskreuz.
And the last show that I looked at is Decadence. Not Decadence, but two separate words, but there's a hyphen. And it's an interesting show because, well, for one thing, it doesn't actually reveal to you the real, like, crux of the story until the second episode. So, like, if you just watched episode one, not that you would come away with, like, a completely different view of the series, but you would really only have, like, half of an understanding of what is going on. And so I'm a little bit, like, unclear if I should really, like, spoil that. Because it's a little like, well, I can't really tell you the plot of the show if I don't tell you that. Because it's, like, a major component. But it doesn't actually reveal itself until the beginning. Basically, the second episode starts out. And you're like, whoa, what's going on? Like, what is this? And it's like, oh, that's, you know, like, that's what's happening. So it's a little, like, hard to discuss it. But I will say that it's a world where there's, like, a kind of a moving fortress. And there's monsters in the world. And, you know, like, humanity doesn't really... Well, at least as far as we know, doesn't, you know, like, really exist a lot outside of this fortress. And there are different jobs within the fortress. So some people are, like, you know, like, cooks and whatever, like, repairmen doing things to the fortress. And then some people are, like, the sort of, like, elite guard that go out and... when there's a monster attack, they, you know, take care of it or whatever. So, our main girl, she has, like, lost an arm in an accident involving monsters when she is a child. And so now she's grown up and she wants to be in the elite guard and fight. And people are like, oh, you can't fight. You don't have, like, you're missing a hand. And she has, like, a mechanical hand, so there's, like, so it's, like, some of it's, like, her training and trying to, like, do this thing that everybody says that she can't, and she gets put on, like, cleaning duty, so she, like, cleans the outside of the fortress. There's, like, monster guts on it and stuff, and she's, like, great, not my dream job, but there she meets one of the, like, her boss there. Does know how to fight, and, like, he has, like, a secret past, you know, and all that stuff. So, like, that, like, all kind of happens in the first episode, and, like, fact, that's, like, a big, you know, what are the monsters, what is going on, and, like, her path involving in that, I guess. And then I guess the other component that I'm not telling you about, and I'm not going to tell you about, just in case that's considered, like, a big spoiler, is, like, has to do with, like, the past of the boss. Mm-hmm. And, like, what, how that factors in. So, like, it's an interesting show. It has, like, two halves that, like, Not totally sure how they're going to, like, I really have no idea how it, like, will resolve. So it's like at least kind of exciting in that way, because it's like I don't feel like it's totally like a, like I can see.
A paint by numbers show where you're like, all right, the blue goes here and the red goes there, and then we get green over here. The end.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm not 100, like it's not totally obvious how those things will resolve, or like what direction they'll take it in. So I think that that's pretty interesting. The characters are pretty fun. There's like some funny stuff. The fights, definitely. I think this is also original anime. And the fights definitely have like a very Attack on Titan inspired feel and look to them. Like, yeah, just kind of like the way the mechanics of the weaponry works and stuff like that feels like, like in that vein. It's just so interesting. Like, I can't talk about the other part that's so interesting, but like, it's like, huh. Like, I feel like you watch the first episode and I feel like it's a lot of fun and you're like, wow, that was cool. And like, kind similar but not similar to like the feeling about God of High School, where it's like, all right, that was like, sort of something I've probably seen a little bit, but like it was cool and like seems like it would be fun and like the world seems interesting and whatever and like monster fights. But then like you start the second episode and you're like, okay, wow, interesting. So I've been, yeah, I've been watching, I've watched 4 or 5 episodes of it so far. So yeah, I think it's really worth checking out just to see, or wait to see how everybody feels like they resolve this like other component and like where it goes from there. I also like, I'm not sure if this series is addressing kind of the ableism of like some of the characters, like not believing in the main girl and like because she's like has like a mechanical hand instead of a regular hand. Like I seem like maybe they were addressing it a little bit, but I don't know how far they'll go with it. But that's also like an interesting tidbit of it. Okay, so for the last thing, maybe we just want to check in on a few things we've been watching or finished up since the last time.
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention very briefly that I was totally wrong about the last season of Railgun. I thought since they finished the festival arc, it was over, and they had like an OVA episode, which hasn't come out on Crunchyroll yet. They'll eventually get it. Apparently, they went into. I totally forgot that there's a few little arcs before the next big major story, and they're just doing those to finish out the season. The Indian poker arc and the such. I totally forgot about them. So they're not like total goof-a-doof. They actually have like serious plot, but they're not like a full super story. I totally forgot that they had that, and that's how they were going to finish the season. So for the one person who relies on me for like information, there still is more index. But my at least you got my feelings on the festival arc, I guess. I'll probably like go into more detail of my thoughts when we could just like wrap up a bunch of shows, but I did finally finish Sing Yesterday for me. And man, I just find it really interesting how people reacted to that show, just in general, because it's a really long-running series that was only 12 episodes. So I had not finished it because I heard it was going to be 18 episodes, which seemed a weird number. And then I found out that since they only had 12 episodes of this long-running series, They basically just did the initial setup and then the ending. And then they did these little extra, like 10-minute episodes that were just like favorite moments from the whole bunch of the middle that they cut out.
Boy, that's an interesting choice.
And so what people thought were is 18 episodes, it's actually 12 episodes, and those other 6 episodes are those little like mini episodes. Or like one of them is just like, oh, like this main, like this kind of major side character, her whole plot line that she has, which is like one of the main end caps of the original manga. We should at least make a nod to it if we're never going to include it in the main story in this I feel like that also added to a lot of the controversy of how people reacted to that show. But I mean, I enjoyed it, but I definitely feel like it feels like in the 80s or 90s, this would have been like a full like 56, 64 episode series. But like, I mean, I guess you get a complete arc. I feel like the thing that came to my mind immediately was Maison no Koku, which was, I feel like, I guess you could make that. I mean, they apparently made a live action movie that just tries to tell that whole series in one movie. There are parts that are clearly, even in Maison no Koku, extended just to be extended, but I feel like at certain points, certain character arcs make much more sense when you slowly see the characters evolve. My main takeaway is I really want to read the manga now to see how these like play out more organically. Yeah, I do feel like something was lost then. But man, that was not the only thing that I just very wildly different opinions on that show. I thought it was very interesting in that respect.
I find it really interesting what you're telling me, you know, about the like, oh, the setup and then we did the ending. Like, I feel like that's very, again, something from the past. Like, I feel like that's very, like I assumed that the reason that they were doing it now was because the manga had ended. So they were like, okay, now we can like tell the full story, which has been happening a lot. And I think when we initially talked about the show, we kind of brought up that that's been like a big trend. But it's almost like they made this anime to sort of like celebrate the series as like, oh, like, which is so like 90s. Like, that's exactly what you would do. It sounds like it's like Here's Greenwood, which is like basically does exactly what you're talking about, except they have more fucking around because like that series is not very serious. But like, you know, like it's really there to like be something special for like all the fans of the manga, which you just don't really see that much anymore. So I think that's so interesting. But it does come from a different era. Like when it started, it was a different time. So.
I mean, I don't think it was an unenjoyable series, but again, if we come back to circle back around to it, I definitely got a lot of enjoyment out of it, and it definitely like made me want to sit down and read the manga. But it is worth noting that it is like super duper the Here's Greenwood of like here's like the beginning setup, and here's the final story arc, and if you want to see what happened in the middle, go out and read the manga, sucker.
Yeah, and I wonder if, I mean, it's fairly long, so I wonder if that manga will ever be released in English. So I'll just mention that Apare and Millionaire Detective are back. I think we're both, so like, Excited about one, perplexed about another. So, Millionaire Detective, I've watched three episodes. The third episode, I don't know if I'm going to watch more than that, but I have to say that I cannot describe in words the absolute absurdity of the third episode. It can only be believed by being seen. Like, it is absolutely bonkers. And I like, it's just outrageous. So, like, I don't know. I still don't know, like, what the show is like. Like, I'm like, is this about, like, the absurdity of capitalism? Like, I don't know. Because essentially, I feel like every story, not every story, but probably every story so far, you could just, like, it basically is solved by, like, I will just pay the criminal a lot of money and that will, like, fix whatever is that. Like, I don't know. It's just so. Please watch the third episode, everyone. It is so crazy. Wait a minute. Okay, I'm going to find my notes about it because I did write some, like, immediately after.
I feel like it's like the Millionaire Detective version of the ending of Blood Sea, where like it's this one show for like 12 episodes, and then the 13th episode is just this bizarre twist into like everybody being slaughtered in this gore fest of destruction.
I mean, okay, there's a Shinkansen, there's a hostage situation, there are idol fans, there's a police shooting, and then there's also police officers that are mad that cops shoot people, which is like a real surprise. And then I was like, I feel like this, like I said, I keep wondering, like, is this show about capitalism? Because, like, it's just like it feels like many problems in the show would be solved by, like, more equitable money, like, distribution, or, like, better health care, or whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just super weird. It's a weird show, guys. I don't I maybe I'll watch more. I was really thrown. I mean, the second episode is crazy also, but episode three is like off the rails. I definitely don't think you would like it more because it's just like it. I don't feel like it's like about him getting all the credit and then like the actual detective guy like not getting any credit or anything. Like, so like that hasn't manifested, but it's also not. I don't know what it is. I don't know.
That episode three really threw you for a loop, Kate.
I'm just telling you guys. I mean, if anybody else is watching this, please let me know if it like totally threw you like me. I thought it was like really crazy, and like maybe other people are like, no, that's just as crazy as the other episodes. And I'd be like, no, it wasn't. Like, and then Apare is back. Are you watching that, Al? Well, maybe we'll just save that to talk about like when it's all over, because yeah, it's been like a real bright spot and like very, you know, like literally and figuratively, because everybody in that show dresses like some sort of costume room has exploded on them. The race has finally begun, and so like that's all like exciting stuff, and like, you know, like I'm really interested to see how Kosame, like, I don't know yet, like, how he really fits in, you know? Like, I feel like he could just be, like, a straight man character, you know, that's there for, like, characters to play off of. But there's also, like, almost like kind of like a Still Waters Run Deep sort of feeling that, like, I mean, I guess he's not really calm most of the time. So that actually is not what I mean. But, like,
look, Kate, when he eventually learns how to do the spin from an Italian assassin and they start collecting the corpse parts, everything will make sense.
Maybe so. Yeah, like, I feel like there's something deep within him that, like, I'm not sure, like, there's, like, a kind of some conversations that happen about, like, he's clearly, like, a very powerful and, like, good swordsman. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know, like, how relevant that is going to be, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And, like, how much of, like, his past is going to be relevant to the story at all. So. All right. So that wraps up another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. I think we're going to go ahead in the next episode to sort of go a little, like, on another track and kind of what I alluded to or talked about in a previous episode, where maybe we're going to talk about, like, some of our projects, like things that we're catching up on or rewatching or rereading or playing or whatever it is, but just like a little maybe break from, like, hey, new shows and things, and maybe more like old shows and things.
If nothing else, I'll be talking about my experiences with Sakura Wars that tie into this episode.
Perfect. See you guys next month.